Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Property Tax Division to order pursuant to House Rule 10.01. Our first order of business is roll call to figure out who's present. The clerk, Mr. Peterson, will take the roll.
Chair Joachim?
Present.
Vice Chair Gomez?
Present.
Representative Hertas?
Present.
Representative Anderson?
Anderson, present.
Representative Becker Finn?
Present.
Representative Fisher?
Fisher, present.
Representative Green?
Present.
Representative Hassan?
Present.
Representative Herr?
Present.
Representative Marquardt?
Present.
Representative Mortensen?
Present.
Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Representative Torkelson?
Present.
That concludes the roll and a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. Before we move on, Representative Hertas, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to let the chair know that we have a caucus, Republican caucus, is protected time from 4:30 to 6 p.m. And so I guess I'm to advise you that we need to end the committee at 4:30.
Thank you for that. Chair Joachim?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We will be doing the whole 90 minutes today. We have a really full agenda. So we were not, we had a caucus tonight too. Everything got pushed back because of the floor. So we'll be going for our full 90 minutes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just before we move on, I wanted to note that the committee documents for today have all been sent to members via email. And for the public, they're available on the committee page on the House website. The first item on the agenda is approval of the minutes from March 4th, 2021. Representative Herr, have you had a chance to review the minutes?
I have, Madam Chair, and so moved.
Representative Herr moves the minutes for March 4th. Does anyone have any questions about the minutes? Seeing none, we'll move on to the vote. We're going to do a voice vote, so please unmute yourselves for a moment and so that we can take the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion is approved and the minutes for March 4th, 2021 are adopted. Okay, so the first bill on our agenda today is House File 1311 from Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1311 before the division for possible inclusion in a division report.
Representative Joachim moves House File 1311 be laid over. Did you also have an amendment, Chair Joachim?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do. First, I would just want to say good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. Thank you for hearing House File 1311. I know we are in a crush for time today, so we will try to ask testifiers to be really brief on all the bills, and maybe we can get done before our 90-minute slot. So I do have an amendment. It's labeled DE2. It's in your packets. It simply tightens up the definition of energy improvement projects and provides some direction to local government units. It was just easier to read and be drafted as a DE. So that's what's before you.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Is there any discussion on the DE2? Seeing none, if we could unmute for a second so we can take a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. We have the bill before us, Chair Joachim, to your bill.
Thank you. The bill before you would add energy improvements to the list currently in statute of what a municipality can consider a special assessment. Currently, the owner of a property can ask the city to assess the construction costs for installing a variety of projects, including a fire protection system, a pedestrian skyway system, or an on-site water containment improvement. This would add energy improvements to that list. And the amendment we added further defines what those improvements can be. And by making this accessible, it enables the owner to pay for the project over a set period of time on their property tax assessment instead of having to pay the full cost up front. The City of St. Louis Park has been working on encouraging small business owners and individual homeowners to accomplish energy savings projects in their current buildings and homes. So this is on existing property. Items like improving the building envelope with insulation, high efficiency heating and cooling mechanical systems, and installing solar panels. This simple change in statute would allow the owner of the property to invest in these energy efficiency improvements to their properties and petition the city to assess the cost to the property. To be clear, the owner of an existing building would have to make this request in order for this tool to be utilized, and the city would have to want to use this tool as well. I would like to thank the City of St. Louis Park and staff for bringing forward this creative idea to encourage energy efficiency and enable folks to do their part to combat climate change. I have with me today Brian Hoffman, who's the Director of Building and Energy from the City of St. Louis Park, to further explain the proposed legislation, as well as Soren Maddock, the City Attorney for St. Louis Park, here on standby to answer any questions if needed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim. Mr. Hoffman, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, certainly. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Brian Hoffman. I serve as the Building and Energy Department Director for the City of St. Louis Park. And we're very appreciative of Representative Joachim for introducing this to the committee today and look forward to your positive consideration. We have a very deeply ingrained partnership with our community members, especially our small business, and trying to basically promote success and investment within the community. I'm going to share a little bit about the fire sprinkler program, because what we're envisioning is that this would allow us to expand it. For over 20 years now, we've been utilizing Section 15 of this statute, 429, and letting our commercial property owners know that if they want to improve their property with a fire protection system, lowers their insurance costs, protects the property, and it helps the city out, that this is one of those partnerships that has just been supported. So a property owner would say, we'd like to take advantage of it. They'd get multiple quotes, work with our city staff, in fact, you know, fire marshal in this instance, to make sure that what they were proposing to do would be, you know, an appropriate system and price valued. They do the work, we would inspect it, approve it, and then it would get assessed to the property. In about 20 years, this has been very successful. There's been no issues or concerns with it. We see the same model being used, especially for our small businesses, as we embarked upon our climate action plan, to help them take their businesses and make them more energy efficient. It saves them money, and it also helps reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Furthermore, most of our businesses, especially our small businesses, they're in buildings that are 1940s, 50s, 60s vintage, and they really need to be invested in to keep them viable, which is an important part of community livability. So we see this as being a very straightforward amendment that would allow a city to go ahead and administer and finance these through a revolving fund, basically to help our property owners make these valuable energy improvements. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hoffman. Members, are there any questions for the testifier or for for Chair Joachim on House File 1311? Seeing none, Representative Joachim, did you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your time. And I'm open for questions as we lay this over. As I said, this is a really simple addition to statute that doesn't cost the state any money, but would create and spur valuable energy efficiency investments in properties across our state. The city would have to be willing to do this, the homeowner would have to be petition, and I think it's a win-win for everyone. So I would ask for your support and let me know if you have any questions as we move forward.
Thank you so much, Chair Joachim. Chair Joachim renews her motion that House File 1311, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And the bill is laid over. And I'm turning the fake gavel over to you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And members, next up, bill on the agenda is House File 1507 from Representative Hamilton. Can I get a motion to move House File 1507 before the division?
I move, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Herr moves House File 1507 before the division. We have the bill before us. Representative Hamilton, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Herr, for moving my bill as well. And I understand you have a very, very packed agenda. 1507 is a 5-year extension for the City of Windham and their TIF district. Madam Chair, I'd like to turn the testimony over to Mr. Steve Nasby, if I could, and remind my testifiers to keep their comments to 2 minutes or under, if they would, please.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Mr. Nasby, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Yakim and members. My name is Steve Nasby. I'm the city administrator, City of Windham. And as Representative Hamilton alluded to, we're asking for a extension on a TIF district. We have TIF District 1-22 in our community. It is a redevelopment district. It is a 34-acre parcel that's been industrial use right on the lake shore of the lake in town. We've got a unique opportunity to redevelop that site, do some shoreline restoration, some lake protection, and also develop some additional housing. We had to get the district started in 2018 as we had a private party looking to build a 45-unit apartment complex that was badly needed in our community. That got built and opened in September of 19. We have some other developers that were lined up to do projects in 2020. And then kind of COVID impacted that. We had them back off some of their initial proposals just to kind of wait and see how that played out. And now at the end of 2020 and now in the beginning of 2021, we're getting some indications from the developers that building supply costs are also pretty high due to Kingston's supply chain during COVID. So they're looking for another year or so before they're willing to make a commitment. Because we had to start the TIF district window back in 18 so we could get that first apartment building built, we are kind of under some time frame squeezes, shall we say, on this district. And we would respectfully ask for an extension of TIF District 1-22, the five-year rule to extend to 10 so that we could enter into agreements with these developers. And then also that's a five-year extension on the back end so that we could continue to capture the same amount of TIF revenue that we would have initially. I'll stand for any questions from yourself or the members. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nasby. Members, are there any questions? I know many of you are familiar with TIF and we'll be talking about it as we go on in the agenda.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hamilton.
Madam Chair, I was contacted by Mr. Nord with State Auditor that said we may need a technical fix. I don't know if Mr. Nord is on this call.
Yes, thank you for reminding me. Mr. Nord, will you state your name for the record and proceed?
Sure, Madam Chair, this is Jason Nord. I'm the TIF Director at the OSA. And I just noticed that the bill contained an extension to the five-year benchmark of the five-year rule, but the following subdivision in statute talks about beginning in the sixth year for some additional restrictions, and it could be appropriate to change that to the 11th year if the five-year rule is being extended to essentially a 10-year rule. So it would be a nice cleanup to avoid confusion.
Thank you, Mr. Nord, and we'll be working with Representative Hamilton on that. I had forgotten about that six-year rule, too, so as we lay this bill over, we'll continue to work on the language as needed. Representative Hamilton, did you have, all right, first, members, any other questions after Mr. Nord's comments? Seeing none, Representative Hamilton, final word.
Well, once again, Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for hearing this bill, and we'd simply ask for your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. With that, Representative Herr renews her motion that House File 1507 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. With that, members, we're going to move on to another one of Representative Hamilton's bill, House File 1508. Can I get a motion to move House File 1508 before the division?
Madam Chair, I'll move House File 1508 for possible inclusion into a division report.
Thank you. Representative Hertas moves House File 1508 before the division. You have the bill before us. Representative Hamilton, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, thank you, Representative Hertas, for moving our bill. House File 1508, very similar, but it's for the city of Mountain Lake. And And Madam Chair, this is the town that I actually call home. I live here, and with me I have Mr. Rob Anderson, who's been working extremely hard. And this has been a fun story too with Mountain Lake. The four-lane highway opened in 2018, and since then, Mr. Anderson's been able to secure a brand new Casey's. We have an A&W restaurant. Everybody come on down. It's fantastic. And Madam Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Anderson to speak to the bill and remind him to keep his testimony under 2 minutes.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Mr. Anderson, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Rob Anderson. As Representative Hamilton said, I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Mountain Lake. I'd just like to also give a little quick shout out to Representative Hamilton. We're pretty proud of him representing our community at the state legislature as well. The City of Mountain Lake is requesting today that the Minnesota House extend the five-year rule to 10 years for our redevelopment TIF District number 1-8. TIF District number 1-8 is located in our downtown next to the city park and is currently vacant. The intent of establishing this TIF District was to acquire four severely dilapidated downtown properties, demolish the buildings, and prepare the site for redevelopment. As much as we've tried over the past 5 years to get a project funded and under construction, to date we have not been successful. The city has invested over $225,000 in the district to date. We are now working with a private developer that has expressed interest in developing a multi-purpose building with retail space on the main floor and housing units on one or more upper levels. If we hope to get this project going, we'll need TIF to make it work. This is why we are respectfully requesting an additional five-year extension. And currently, again, due to COVID, our TIF district will expire April 2021. So we are running up against a quick deadline here. So your action and support is very much appreciated. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Members, are there any questions from Mr. Anderson or Representative Hamilton? Might have one quick question, Mr. Nord. Does this one also bump up against the six-year rule? Mr. Nord,
proceed. Yes, the same issue with the extension of the five-year rule. The five-year was changed to 10, and so changing the sixth to the 11th year would be a nice clarifying change.
Thank you, Mr. Nord. So we'll note that as well as we move forward. Members, any questions? Seeing none, Representative Hamilton, final word.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Once again, simply ask for your support and thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Representative Hertaz renews his motion that House File 1508 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report, and the bill's laid over. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1736 from Representative Fisher. Representative Fisher, would you like to move your bill before the division?
Yes, Chair Joachim, I'd like to move House File 1736 to be laid over possible inclusion.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And I believe that you have an A3 amendment as well.
Yes, Chair Joachim, I do. I would like to have the A3 amendment to get the bill into the shape that I would like it in, please.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Members, I know you all have the A3 amendment in front of you in your electronic packets. Are there any questions on the A3 amendment? Seeing none, members, this will be a voice vote, so please unmute your microphones. All those in favor of the A3 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? No. Thank you. The A3 amendment is adopted. Representative Fisher, to your bill.
Thank you, Chair Joachim and committee, for the opportunity to present House File 1736. This is a bill that provides some flexibility for tax increment financing. I've been working with city organizations on language to provide some additional flexibility. A common request that cities receive is how they can help our small business with tools to assist with housing construction, preservations, These issues have taken on more importance during the current pandemic. The bill provides additional flexibility for cities to also do more with existing tools. Section 1 of the bill allows for temporary use of unobligated increment from a TIP district to a city's general fund after adoption of a spending plan. Section 2 provides flexibility for use of tax increment for housing similar to some of the city-specific housing TIP bills we've heard. It also increases the percentage of expenditures that could be used outside of a district for affordable housing. And Sections 3 and 4 extend the 5-year rule to a 10-year rule so districts that have been impacted by delays in redevelopment may remain viable. Overall, the intent is to make it easier for cities to have their flexibility to make their TIP projects work. This is somewhat modeled on a bill that was that came out on TIP districts after the Great Recession. I do have several testifiers here with me, and I also pledge that this is still a work in process, and I am committed to continue working on the bill to make it even better. And with that, I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. I believe that we are going to keep it really brief. So thank you to Gary Carlson for being willing to turn it over to Ms. Nauman. So Ms. Nauman, welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Wonderful. Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity to testify today in support of House File 1736, and I will be very brief, and I recognize the importance of that. So I am Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities and the League of Minnesota Cities. Gary Carlson and I have been working very closely with our cities and to craft a bill, to language for a bill that does provide some cities with some needed flexibility in the use of tax increment financing. TIF, or otherwise known as TIF. TIF is a very important local tool to spur redevelopment. And it's one of the few tools in the local toolbox for these purposes. But of course, it's a complicated tool to use. And sometimes, as you know, cities come forth with individual bills seeking things like extensions and other needs for modification in the use of the tool to accommodate, you know, either delays or certain local project considerations. So I appreciate the time to testify today. One of the most, as Representative Fisher pointed out, a very common request for cities is for the extensions. Right now also in this bill is on section one, it is a provision that would allow flexibility for cities during the COVID-19 pandemic in the use of excess increment for general municipal purposes on a temporary basis. This language was modeled after a 2010 law that gave cities some flexibility during the Great Recession at that time. And so we are trying to sort of stay within the spirit of the precedent, but again, to allow for some flexibility during this challenging time for many cities with their finances. The Section 2 does provide additional flexibility for using tax increment for housing and locally identified housing needs. And we are hopeful that it would jumpstart the creation of more local housing trust funds, which provide to be very helpful as cities do address local housing needs. And this is certainly something that has been a key issue and certainly the center of debate for the state and local governments for the last several years. That section also does increase the percentage of expenditures that can be used outside of a district for affordable housing, and it adds qualifying owner-occupied housing as an eligible use. And again, the intention there is to allow cities some flexibility with the use of TIP for these purposes. The bill also does extend the 5-year rule to 10 years for cities that across the state that have been impacted by delays in redevelopment due to COVID and other circumstances so that they can remain viable for redevelopment. And again, this I think is very consistent with certainly the many bills that cities ask for extensions just to accommodate local projects that sometimes just cannot be done within the timeframe of the TIF district. So Madam Chair and members, I will be happy to stand for any questions and thank you for your time this afternoon.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. I believe that we also have Mr. Nord again signed up. Mr. Nord.
Sure, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, for the record, my name is Jason Nord. I'm the TIF Division Director at the Office of the State Auditor. And very briefly, I just wanted to offer some neutral and technical comments, given our past experience with the similar provision used back during the recession. So I'd acknowledge that Section 1 does provide local governments with some financial flexibility, but the committee might also want to understand that the return of unneeded increments can occur without this provision. And in under current law, what would happen is returned increment would be redistributed to the county, the city, and the school district. So that would give the county and the city some financial flexibility, where the school district share is generally just offset from state aids. And TIF authorities using either the spending plan under section one or using the current law authority, they might end up capturing increment for a little bit longer than they might otherwise by not using the increment to decertify sooner. But on a more technical level, first, I appreciate the inclusion of paragraph D language, but I do have one question that may need clarification. If a city hasn't returned excess increment that they had been required to return, it's not clear to me if that is considered ineligible under paragraph D or whether that would be usable unobligated increment. So that would be a nice clarification. Second, I would just note that in our previous experience with spending plans, they were often very broad. So I don't know if there's any expectation for what our office should do if we receive plans that don't provide significant details. And then also, I note under paragraph F, there's a requirement to identify a plan for how to spend money that wasn't able to be spent by 2022. And it wasn't clear to me whether those subsequent plans should also be sent to our office. And then lastly, under section two, I note that it says that the transfers to the housing trust funds are not subject to the TIF Act reporting requirements. It would be important to our office to actually have those transfer amounts be reported. And perhaps this was just meant to apply to the subsequent uses of those transfers. But if we're not aware that a transfer occurred, it would just appear to us that TIF funds disappeared. So that concludes my observations, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Nord. That was very helpful. And Representative Fisher has mentioned that he still wants to continue to work on this. Representative Fisher, any comments about that?
Thank you, Chair Joachim. I appreciate the information from Mr. Nord. I did receive it late yesterday, and it is something that I've been working with the local cities on organizations, and it is something that we want to make sure that we get these points all addressed to make sure that things are clear for the state auditor's office and transparent as much as possible. So thank you. We appreciate the advice. And as we get the language redrafted, we'll look forward to the continued input to make sure we've got it right.
Listen, thank you, Representative Fisher, and thank you, Mr. Nord. I am also carrying a bill language around the Affordable Housing Trust Fund transfers, and I will take your comments to note as well as we move forward. Members, are there any questions for Representative Fisher, Mr. Nord, Ms. Naumann? Seeing none. Get to the right spot here. There we go. Representative Fisher renews his motion that House File 1736 is amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. So the bill is laid over. The next bill on the agenda we have is House File 1587 from Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do have an amendment to the bill to get in the shape I'd like.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Why don't we move your House File 1587 before the committee? Would you make that motion first?
Move that House File 1587 be laid over for possible inclusion in the committee report.
Thank you. And then the bill's moved before the committee. And now to the A2 amendment, Representative Torkelson, I believe you could either briefly explain the amendment or Representative Hertaz could as well.
Oh, thank you. I'd be happy to explain the amendment. The amendment will just extend the original bill to go statewide instead of just for Greater Minnesota and include the six-year provisions that we've been talking about off and on today.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Members, any questions on the amendment that is labeled A2? Seeing none, this is going to be a voice vote. So if people unmute. Representative Hertaz, did I hear? Representative Hertaz, you go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to share quickly some information about the A1 amendment and the suggestion and idea to modify this to include the entire state in terms of a policy decision on extending the 5-year rule to the 10-year rule. And in doing so, I asked House Research to do some little bit of exploring on a limited time basis that they had. I did get some of the replies, and I just wanted to share just quickly a little bit of data about our general TIF districts. And so with regard to TIF districts, statewide during 2019, there were 1,648 active TIF districts. There were 1,043 of them in greater Minnesota and the remainder in the metro. That breaks down to approximately 2/3 in greater Minnesota and 1/3 in the metro area. On the other hand, with regard to revenue generated by type, when we compare those same data statewide versus greater Minnesota, what we're seeing is about $243 million of revenue that's generated statewide. Here, greater Minnesota generates the smaller portion, about $36 million, and the metro area about $206 million. Also, with regard to the law that we're proposing, it's interesting to note, or is important to note, that back in 2009, we did a blanket extension of the 5-year rule for districts certified between 2003 and 2009 to accommodate for the development slowdown during the recession during those years. As you know, Madam Chair and Chair Marquardt, I reached out to both of you to discuss this idea. There seems to be general support to do it, and I will just add that oftentimes with redevelopment districts and housing, economic development, all of the uses of TIF, there's a good deal of money and a lot more zeros involved today. Fortunately, interest rates are lower, but nonetheless, risk taking is a big deal. And in terms to in the prospect of inducing developers to go ahead and come forward, always time is always an issue, because as a developer, you just never know what the absorption rate will be. By that, members who are not familiar with development, the absorption rate is the rate in which the land actually gets developed and you get tenants and or uses fully occupying the property. So I think this is a good step to move forward, and I'll keep my comments brief, but I would look forward to working with Mr. Nord on really kind of unifying a better policy for the use of TIF as we move forward.
Thank you, Representative Hertaz, and I really want to thank you for your work on this and reaching out and improving on all of our TIF extension bills by having this discussion. Representative Torkelson, I believe that you, of course, members to the A2 amendment that's in front of us. So members, this will be a voice vote. Any further questions? I didn't see any further questions on the amendment. So all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, aye. No. The A2 amendment has passed. And Representative Torkelson, to your bill. Representative Torkelson, you're still on mute.
First time that's ever happened. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. As 1587 as amended will extend the TIF for all TIF districts potentially to 10 years and in some cases 11 years under the 6-year rule. I do have a testifier, at least one, maybe two, that I believe are on the line. And I would call on Dan Dorman to, if he's online, to speak to the bill briefly.
Mr. Dorman, please introduce, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Dan Dorman. I'm representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities and the Greater Minnesota Partnership on this issue. And we've heard about the issue that a lot of the cities in Greater Minnesota have brought forward is development sometimes takes time, particularly I'm thinking about both in Red Wing and Austin. The cities have identified larger parcels that they would like to rehabilitate and eventually do workforce housing projects. And there's significant tracts of land, and they're going to acquire the property as it becomes available. What the issue is if you acquire the piece of land, tear the building down, that five-year clock starts to run, and they'd be better off in that case leaving the blight stand. Problem with that then is blight. People don't like to look at it, impacts neighboring properties. And so the requests that we originally put in, and we certainly have no objection to it being statewide, weren't sure if it was the same issue in the metropolitan area. Happy to see the amendment regardless. But our issue was that, you know, that you tear the building down, the five-year clock starts, you may not be able to acquire all the property that's going to be needed for this particular development within that five-year period of time. So our request was to delay that clock so that it would start, not necessarily when that first building was removed, which is what the bill does. And we're very appreciative of Representative Torkelson hearing the bill and the amendment offered and you for hearing it. I'd be happy to stand for any questions if you have them. I think it's a fairly straightforward piece of legislation, but happy to, again, answer any questions you may have, Madam Chair, or members of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Dorman. I think we'll go to the next testifier I have signed up, and then we'll go to questions. I have a Marshall Hallett. Could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Madam Chair, if I can interrupt, I'm not sure that Marshall was able to, I think he's testifying on another bill, and I don't know that he'll be able to join us with the change in timing. I apologize for that.
Oh, no, Mr. Dorman, no need to apologize. It just makes things a little bit quicker. Members, any questions for Mr. Dorman or Representative Torkelson? Seeing none, Representative Torkelson, final word.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I think the bill is fairly straightforward. Thank you for hearing the bill. Thank you, members, for your support. And thanks to the testifiers and Representative Hertaus for his support. I'm just surprised I haven't heard from the department, but maybe we got it right this time.
Thank you, Representative.
With that, Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1578 be laid over for possible inclusion.
Thank you so much, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson renews his motion that House File 1587, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. The bill is laid over. And thank you, members. And we're going to move on to the next item on the agenda, which is House File 1666 from Representative Howard. Can I get a motion to move House File 1666 before the division?
I'll make that motion, Madam Chair.
Representative Fisher moves that House File 1666 be placed before the division with possible inclusion in the division report. Representative Howard, I believe you have an A1 amendment.
Madam Chair, that is correct.
Thank you. Well, Representative Fisher, will you be willing to move the A1 amendment before us?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the A1 amendment, please.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Howard, welcome to the Property Tax Committee. Please briefly describe your A1 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A1 amendment is just a one-line technical amendment to get the bill in the shape that I'd like it. It's similar to an amendment I think we've seen in some other housing TIF bills that have been before the committee.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Members, any questions on the amendment that is labeled? Now I got to get to my right page here. Sorry, I should have said that before. The A1 amendment, that makes it easy. And members, any questions on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, this will be a voice vote. Please unmute yourself. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, no. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Howard, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1666 is a bill that comes to us from my community in Richfield. Richfield is like many other communities across the state that are taking an active role in the housing space, in particular in work to address our affordable housing crisis. This bill would add some flexibility to our housing TIF district in Richfield to be able to address the specific community needs we're seeing in Richfield. And I think I'd like to have my testifiers speak to more of those specifics. I'm just grateful to be before the committee and welcome any questions.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Mayor Gonzalez, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, everyone. I am Mayor Maria Regan Gonzalez. Of Richfield. And I just want to thank the chair and the committee members for hearing our request today. So as many of you know, affordable housing is a crisis right now across our state, and ensuring that we have housing affordability and stability is foundational across all of our communities. But in Richfield, just to give you a snapshot, 72% of our students are students of color, and many of our students in our school districts are renters. And so ensuring that we have housing stability and affordability is crucial in ensuring that our students and our families can thrive like they need. And Richfield traditionally has been a pretty affordable community for quite a while, but given the housing pressures we are facing and the market rates that are drastically increasing, it's really being threatened right now. That affordability and stability in our city is being threatened. And that's not only the case in Richfield, but that is across the region and across the state. So we are seeing a lot of emerging needs because of this pressure on our affordable housing. And we want to make sure that we have the tools necessary to address these needs. So that includes making sure that we're able to support residents who are cost burdened with their housing payments, including those folks that are earning minimum wages, folks that need housing that's affordable and accessible, including for our seniors, for our residents with disabilities as well, making sure that our families and our students have the housing stability that they need. And then we have the physical conditions of our buildings. So the majority of our apartment buildings and single family homes in Richfield were built in the 1950s and in the 1960s, and they are in desperate need of repair. And so what we're asking for is additional flexibility, because the current amount of state and federal housing resources is really has not been enough to meet the needs that we have in our community to keep our housing affordable and maintain that stability. So I will pass it on to our housing manager, Julie Urban, but our request is to have more flexibility in our tools to meet these housing needs.
Thank you, Mayor Gonzalez. Ms. Urban, can you state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. I'm Julie Urban, and I'm the Housing and Redevelopment Manager for the City of Richfield. And I just talked more specifically about the proposed legislation that's before you today, again, is to provide Richfield with a flexible tool and funding source for affordable housing efforts. It would allow us to transfer pooled tax increment into our Affordable Housing Trust Fund. So with our trust fund, we can construct and preserve housing that's affordable for very low-income renters, up to 50% AMI, and also for low-income homeowners, up to 80% of the AMI. So for many years, Richfield has required any new development that receives tax increment to either create affordable housing or contribute 15% of the increment to pooling. So we currently pool 15% of the tax increment generated by three different redevelopment TIF districts. And so we are asking to be able to transfer the existing and future pooled increment from those districts to our trust fund, and then be able to use those funds consistent with the trust fund ordinance and policies that the city has adopted. The proposed legislation would also allow us to access that additional 10% affordable housing contribution that's currently allowed in TIF law. We'd like to be able to use it for both affordable homeownership as well as affordable rental opportunities. So Richfield has long been a leader in affordable housing programs that address just the continuum of housing needs. And we want to be able to expand on these efforts and to meet the growing need of our residents and the region. But we need resources to do that. So our pooled increment is one such existing local resource. You know, it's not a new tax. It's instead funding that's already being collected and that we just want to be able to utilize to its greatest potential. So passing this legislation, allowing us to do our affordable housing work through our trust fund, would give us the flexibility necessary to respond to the needs of our community and help those needs in the broader region. So we thank you for the opportunity to present to you today, and we're available for questions. And we also have our HRA attorney, Julie Eddington, available if there are any technical TIF legislation questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Urban. Members, are there any questions for Ms. Urban or Mayor Gonzalez or Representative Howard? Seeing none, Representative Howard, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the time before the committee and really enjoy getting to be with Mayor Reagan Gonzalez and Julie Urban. It feels like getting the old band back together a little bit. This is a great bill to help our community meet the housing needs of our community. And I just really appreciate the opportunity to be before the committee today.
Thank you, Representative Howard. With that, Representative Fisher renews his motion that House File 1666 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report, and the bill is laid over. The next bill on the agenda is House File 1157, also from Representative Howard. Can I get a motion to move House File 1157 before the division?
I'll make that motion, Madam Chair. House File 1157.
Representative Fisher makes the motion that House File 1157 be before the division. So now we have the bill before us. Representative Howard, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I really appreciate the time in committee to bring this bill, this very important bill related to housing and property taxes before us today. This bill is, from my perspective and the perspective of housing providers and advocates across the state, a key element to our work this session and beyond to address our affordable housing crisis. I think for our members that are on our housing committee or preventing homelessness committee, I think everyone agrees we need to be proactive in addressing our affordable housing crisis. And that's the spirit that this bill comes before us today. To give you some background, this bill deals with a 4D property tax rates and a little bit of background about the problem that this bill is attempting to solve and its impact in our work in affordable housing. For taxation purposes, affordable housing is assessed at the same level, same value as market rate, even though it cannot generate the same value unless rents are raised and not affordable. And so to correct this, the legislature created a 4D property tax status to create a lower rate and to incent the creation and preservation of affordable rental housing. A few years ago, like probably most people, that 4D is that a robot in a Star Wars film, R2-D2. I had no idea what we were talking about until I saw the real, tangible, and positive impact that this had in my community. In 2017, Seasons Park, a 400-unit housing, multi-use housing facility in Richfield, which was a naturally occurring affordable housing, which means fairly old, pretty run down, but it was a huge source of affordable housing in our district. It also had a lot of 2 and 3 bedroom apartments, so 300 children lived at Seasons Park. It was on the brink of being sold, repurposed, and everyone in that facility would have been displaced. We've seen this kind of mass displacement in naturally occurring affordable housing all across the region and state. It's especially harmful to our BIPOC communities. It's hurt our kids. But instead, we had a different outcome. Aon, a nonprofit housing provider, was able to emerge really at the last minute and secure and purchase Seasons Park and also commit to making the improvements to make this a more quality, affordable place for people to live in our community. The 4D property tax status was a key element to make the financing of this facility work, and Aon operates Seasons Park to this day. Since then, that was a few years ago, the utility of the 4D property tax status has been greatly minimized as property tax values have went through the roof. In the last 7 years, property tax values on Class D properties have increased by more than 70%, essentially wiping out the benefit of the original legislation. And so what this bill would do was simplify and reduce the 4D property tax rate, bringing it in line with the intended goal to create and preserve affordable housing throughout our state. The benefits of such a move would be many. First and foremost, this would allow housing providers to keep rents down and grow their portfolio for affordable housing. And this is especially relevant in our work to preserve NOAA housing like at Seasons Park in Richfield. We know that every day, especially in this pandemic, more and more multi-tenant facilities are at risk. And this is a critical part in being in that fight to maintain housing affordability. Lastly, I want to respond to one potential criticism of this bill, which is that potentially it could cause a property tax shift onto homeowners. This is the third year I've been working on this bill, and the issue has been studied extensively. We've done property tax analysis and that's available by community. And there is a modest shift, no doubt. But just of note, just 43 cities have more than 2% of their overall tax capacity in 40 affordable housing. And of those 43 cities, 29 would see less than a $20 shift on an average home. I just want to commit to legislators, if you have a question about how this proposal would impact your city, I'd love to follow up offline and provide that data and work together with you to understand the impact. And so I acknowledge that there could be a slight shift, but I think the balance of the value created, especially when we're talking about our huge gaps in terms of racial equity, make this a no-brainer. And I really encourage your support of this bill. I've got testifiers today that represent a huge coalition of nonprofit housing advocates, the Homes for All Coalition, and more that believe this is a key tool for us to address our affordable housing crisis. Now is not the time to wring our hands. It's the time for action, and I would encourage your support of this bill.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Looking at the time and wanting to be respectful of the 4:30, we will be recessing at 4:30 and coming back at 6 o'clock. I would like to get through the testifiers for this bill and maybe member questions if possible. Otherwise, I'm sorry, we're going to have folks come back. So with that, Representative Howard, who is your first testifier?
Madam Chair, I believe Alan Arthur, CEO of AON.
Thank you. Mr. Arthur, will you introduce yourself for the record and proceed?
Chair Youakim and representatives, it's great to be here. My name is Alan Arthur, and I'm the president and CEO of AON. AON is a nonprofit, a developer, owner, and manager of 5,560 affordable apartment homes in Minnesota. We're one of 17 nonprofits and for-profit affordable housing producers who develop and operate most of the affordable housing properties in Minnesota. We have a coalition to support this bill. As previous testifiers have stated, we faced an affordable housing crisis in core cities, in suburbs, and in greater Minnesota cities as well. One issue we face is how affordable housing rental properties are taxed. As Representative Howard said almost a decade ago, the legislature created the Class 4D tax classification as a tool for the creation and retention of affordable units through a two-tiered tax rate. As unfortunately Representative Howard stated, the valuation of affordable properties is driven by market rate housing valuations. That's right. Assessors value our affordable two-bedroom unit that has an $1,100 a month rent. They value it based on the $2,000 a month rents across the street in the market housing. So that this has severely reduced or wiped out entirely the tax benefit of the original state policy. As a result, really over the last few years, essentially and effectively, the taxes have been shifting from other properties onto the shoulders of these affordable apartment home properties in the last few years. So it makes it extremely difficult for operators like AON, both nonprofits and for-profits, to keep rents low and reinvest in the properties. House File 1157 would simplify and reduce the classification rate for all 4D properties and make the state tax code work for rather than against the state's policy goal to encourage the development and retention of affordable housing. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur. Next up, we have Mr. Williams. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Howard. My name is Paul Williams. I'm the president and CEO of Project for Pride and Living, PPL. PPL is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to build hope, assets, and self-reliance through affordable housing and career readiness services. We own and manage about 1,600 units of affordable housing across the Twin Cities, including Minneapolis, St. Paul, and several western suburbs. Close to 3,500 folks live with us every night. We also help over 5,000 adults and young people build skills and get jobs with living wages. I want to speak in support of House File 1157 today. There are many policy tools which need to be used to address the affordable housing crisis in Minnesota. Lowering the tax rate on Class 4D units, as Alan was saying, is among the most cost-effective of those tools. Lowering that tax rate on these properties can also have a quick, beneficial impact, providing the certainty of tax relief for affordable housing operators and developers for the pay 2022 year. So I just want to quickly share with you the tax impact which these skyrocketing property valuations have had on our projects across the Twin Cities. So for us at PPL alone, property valuations on our portfolio of affordable housing buildings have increased 33% since 2017, just in the last 3 years. The property taxes on those same buildings have increased by 37% from 2017 to 2020. That amounts to an additional $383,000 in taxes that we've paid over that same time period. Per unit taxes have increased from $976 to $1,337, an additional $361 per unit. So at PPL alone, the 4D proposal here would save our properties almost $1 million per year, or $832 per unit. Right now, I have to go out and raise those dollars from philanthropic sources. That is getting increasingly difficult to do. Representative Howard's bill would allow us to take those savings and help us offset the increased COVID-19 costs, which are very real. It would help us keep rent increases, as Alan noted, to a minimum, and it would increase our reinvestment in crucial capital and operating support for our existing properties. All of that has real impact, obviously, on real folks across our properties as well as across the state. For new development, which is so desperately needed, it will allow us and our peers to leverage more private debt and reduce the dependence on public investment required when building new affordable housing projects. Right now, the decision to build new affordable housing, both workforce housing and especially for the very lowest income housing in our communities, is increasingly difficult. It just doesn't pencil out. If we can't make this work as a nonprofit, we simply won't be able to build more affordable housing. And the only folks who can build that, especially lowest income housing, really are nonprofits who can even begin to make it pencil out. So this really is crucial. So obviously, as Alan noted, this bill does shift some costs off of low-income renters who have been especially hard hit in this pandemic and this economic downturn. Those folks are disproportionately female heads of households, as we heard, and come from communities of color. So in short, Madam Chair, while this bill was already much needed before COVID, we can almost look at this as pandemic relief, actually, a measure that would do much good for many at a very small cost. So thank you, and happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Before we recess until 6 tonight, I see a hand up by Representative Gomez. Question for these testifiers?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I wanted to, I'm really thankful to Mr. Williams and Mr. Arthur for being here. I know that, Mr. Williams, we haven't really had much of a chance to meet. You're a son of Rondo, but I'm a daughter of the South Side, and the community that I love and where I live wouldn't be what it is without you. And so thank you for all your work there. I really, really appreciate it. I guess I'm wondering, I know that AON and that PPL are going to invest any tax benefits that they get back into their tenants, back into their buildings, keeping rents affordable for people. I guess what I'm wondering about is, there are a lot of affordable housing purveyors who are for-profits who expect a return on their investment. And I'm wondering how it is that we can ensure that, that benefits that are going to the owners of properties whose primary motive is profit, how we're ensuring that that this benefit gets passed on to the people who we know need it, right, who are our low-income renters. So I guess, I don't know if the author or anybody else has a comment about that.
Who would like to briefly answer that so then we can go to recess? Representative Howard?
Madam Chair and Representative Gomez, that's a really great question. The goal of this bill isn't to sort of improve a balance sheet. It is, the goal is to preserve and improve and expand the amount of affordable housing in our communities. And so if there's ways, I think there has been some discussion about the notion of guardrails, so to speak, or something that could, ensure the sort of accountability and transparency related to this. And I think that's important. I'm really open to that and view that as a really helpful suggestion as we kind of take this bill through the process.
Great. Representative Gomez, quick follow-up?
No, that's good. I appreciate it. I do think that, if we're going to move forward with adding this to our division report, that maybe we should just talk more about what that actually looks like in the legislation. But thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez and members. We're going to continue this discussion at 6 o'clock. I hope the testifiers can stick around for this bill, and then we'll move to Representative Herr's bill. So with that, members, we are in recess until 6 p.m. Members and testifiers, welcome back to the Property Tax Committee. Thank you for your patience. We'll continue on with our agenda with the intention of finishing up by 6:30 p.m. First, I have a brief comment to make regarding my bill, House File 1311, from the beginning of the agenda, dealing with energy improvement assessments. Mr. Hoffman, who is here from the City of St. Louis Park, wanted to extend a thank you for a meeting that he had with the representatives of the Bankers Association, the Realtors, and the credit unions to discuss the bill. He had meant to include it in his testimony and forgot, and wanted to acknowledge the meeting went well and to thank them. Thank them for meeting, and I wanted to also pass on my thank you for their interest in our bill, and we will end to encourage continuing dialogue. So thank you, members. And with that, we are going to move on. Representative Howard, welcome back. We're going to move on with the testimony that we have. The names are slightly different from your agenda just because we bumped into 6 p.m. instead. So next up, we have Mr. Lightfoot. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Well, thank you, Chair Joachim and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Daniel Lightfoot, and I serve as an intergovernmental relations representative with the League of Minnesota Cities. I will be very brief. We did submit a letter, written testimony to the committee, which should be in your packets and posted. But I wanted to first express my appreciation to Representative Howard for all the work that he's been doing this session on affordable housing. It's an incredibly important issue for all of our 835 member cities of the league. Our concerns with House File 1157 center around the reduction in class rate of the 4D low income rental classification program to 0.25 and the resulting property tax shift onto all existing property taxpayers as net tax capacity is reduced due to the change. And I'd like to point out that current modeling, while it does depict the shift for regions and certain cities, it doesn't factor in the changing property tax landscape due to COVID-19 or any analysis on additional properties that might enroll in the program with the more favorable class rate, which would also exacerbate that shift. And so we believe that in addition to robust analysis of the program before any changes made, before reducing that class rate to the lowest tax class in the state, that there should be some robust analysis, which is called for in Representative Herr's House File 1298. We do continue to work with Representative Howard and other stakeholders on some of our concerns. It's been mentioned possible guardrail language, as well as potentially some meaningful change to the program that better minimizes that potential property tax increase to existing residents, and namely our concerns center around low-income homeowners, homeowners on fixed income, as well as small businesses that are currently struggling to pay property taxes as well. But with that, I'd like to turn it over to St. Peter City Administrator Todd Prafke, who will provide a brief perspective from a greater Minnesota city.
Thank you, Mr. Lightfoot. Mr. Prafke, could you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Madam Chair, my name is Todd Prafke. I'm the city administrator here in St. Peter. And thanks to you and all the committee members for having me testify this evening. I come to this not only as a city administrator, but an affordable housing advocate. So you really are aware and have toured some of the projects that Peter has done related to affordable housing. And frankly, they're really great. Just to give you some additional perspective, we do believe that the 4D tool is very important. And we have over 550 units within our community that receive that special benefit. That's of a total of about 1,100 units in total in our community that are rental properties. So a little bit over half of the rental properties are participating in that program. So we really get and understand and think Representative Howard has been working really hard this year and doing the right stuff related to affordable housing. It is so important. But here's the challenge that we face as a greater Minnesota community and certainly in St. Peter. About 2.5% of our our city's property tax capacity is already in 4D programming. And so any shift that goes on tips us over into a really different world going forward. And so we are concerned about that and the impact that that can have on homeowners, on businesses, on low-income homeowners, because we've had programs that have helped moderate income families get into home ownership too. It's not just rental. Home ownership is an important component for moderate income families as well and creating stability within communities. We think that's very important. We think that any change to this program, any significant change like this, has the potential to really penalize cities that have been in the forefront of developing affordable housing. Because this can really change the tax base. And because of that shift, it can be a disincentive for communities to want to participate in affordable housing. It has the potential to do that, and that could be an offshoot of this. So we want to make sure that people understand the impact of that. Certainly, again, for communities that have been in the forefront and have developed a lot of affordable housing. We think that's really important. We are supportive of House File 1298, and we think that additional information can be really helpful, not only to the legislature as you look at how to, frankly, probably more surgically assign resources through this program. We think that's important. We think that'll help local units of government as well in making decisions going forward with that additional data that House File might provide. One last item that I'd mention is that and I think there's been agreement, and I've testified in other venues on this bill and other activities that are related to affordable housing. But we all, I think, agree that affordable housing and moving forward with this is not only a statewide issue, but a nationwide issue. This solution puts, or this bill puts much of that solution, or a portion of that solution, only on the backs of local government and local property taxpayers. And I don't know that that's exactly where we want this to go. Certainly local units of government have choices in this, but again, for those that have been active, for those that have been proactive and forward with affordable housing, I am concerned that this could be a disincentive for them going into the future and a major shift to make it politically not palatable to continue to develop affordable housing in communities like St. Peter. Thanks, Madam Chair, for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Prathke. And members, I want to thank Mr. Williams and Mr. Arthur for coming back as well tonight. And Mr. Lightfoot for being here. So with that, members, do we have any questions for any of the testifiers or for Representative Howard? I'll give it a minute.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hertas. Go ahead, Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I couldn't find my raise hand button. Representative Howard, I guess, you know, I understand the motive of what you're trying to do here in terms of making housing more affordable. We also have, you know, with regard to this issue being about lowering the property taxes, we do have the Renters Credit Program. I know it's a pretty fun program of Chair Marquardt. We've discussed it many times over the years in the Property Tax Committee. But I'm wondering if renters who are in this type of property, if it will be necessary to modify the program, if the property taxes are being lowered by two-thirds, if we would need to apply a different renter's credit rate or percentage to occupants of those buildings, it assumes a higher rate of property tax being paid and the amount of refund that would be received. What are your thoughts on that, Representative Howard?
Representative Howard.
Thank you for the question, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Hertas. I'd be happy to follow up. As I understand, the renter's credit is going to be pegged in somewhat to the rents that the actual tenants are going to be paying. I'm not exactly sure. In some ways, I feel like this policy change is going to allow us to preserve and expand the amount of affordable housing units and folks that are able to access affordable housing. In terms of, is tenant X going to have their rent lowered, from a certain amount, and will that affect the renter's credit? I'm not certain, but I'd be happy to sort of follow up. And if any of our testifiers or staff have a question, I'd be happy to dig into that a little bit.
Representative Hertas.
Madam Chair?
Yes, did you have a follow-up, Representative Hertas?
I did, thank you. Well, Representative Howard, the renter's credit assumes that a certain percent of rent paid is the amount that is eligible for a percent of the, for a refund based on income. And obviously there are other classes of property which the assumption is that they're paying the normal property tax rate without this adjustment in rate. So the point I'm trying to make is that with the current renters program, it assumes a percentage of the total rent paid is paid as property tax. Here is a situation: if your bill is enacted, you will actually be lowering that property tax per unit by approximately two-thirds, 0.75 to 0.25. So it would seem reasonable that it is necessary then to make adjustments with regard to the renter's credit to reflect the actual rent that is paid. I should say property taxes within the rent that's paid.
Yes, thank you. Representative Howard, did you have any comments? And then I see Representative Gomez on too.
No, Madam Chair. Happy to kind of dig into that a little bit.
Yeah, Representative Hertas does bring up another good point too. There is some interaction, would be some interaction with the property tax refund as well if more of the burden was shifted over to homeowners on the property tax refund fund, and there would be a revenue estimate on that. I'm not sure if we have it yet in our packets, but Representative Gomez.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just on this issue of changing the percentage of, I think it's like there's an assumption in statute that 19% of rent, I think it is basically composed of property taxes. I think that we could probably have sort of a broader conversation about whether that's still the right percentage to use or not. I guess what I would say is that, people rent homes from in different kinds of in properties, in different kind of varieties of properties that are taxed at different class rates, and we don't adjust for that already in our property tax refund calculation. I think that the other piece kind of that we talked about earlier, and the question that I had earlier, is like when these, I think that Mr. Arthur and Mr. Williams talked a little bit about, what it takes to run a nonprofit kind, basically what it takes to like run the kind of housing that they do, which is often like supportive services. And, that a lot of times the kind of the finances are so tight that you do have to put off certain investments that you would otherwise make. And so when they're talking to us about this this break, what they were saying was that they were going to reinvest a lot of that into the property itself. The other piece is that there's not like a guarantee that somebody's rent is going to go down because of the investment that they get from the break that they get in 4D. And so I guess like just the kind of reality is that we just use that sort of 19%. I mean, as something that doesn't exactly perfectly reflect the percentage that every renter in every variety of housing that's charged a different class rate across the state pays, right? It doesn't exactly reflect that. And we don't go into those sort of really complex calculations. So I guess I just would say that I support this, and I wouldn't want us to decrease the amount of renters rebate that low income renters received because of this policy. I don't think that it reflects the way that we treat rental property for purposes of the property tax refund, like currently. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gomez. I will note, you're right, there's an assumption that 17% of the property taxes being paid calculated for the renter's credit. But if their rent did go down because of this, if there was that investment in the property, which we're still not sure there would be, then actually their ability to, their renter's credit would be lowered as well because the rent is lower. So there are some interactions that are all going on with this bill, but I want to move to Representative Hertaus briefly, and then we're going to move on. Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, that's correct. The current rate is 17%. That's kind of shifted around from biennium, different changing circumstances. But I think that the renter's credit is a program that very well targets those who need the benefit. And to Representative Gomez's point, there's no guarantee in lowering the property taxes that the rents are actually going to go down. So if the rents happen to go up and you're paying a percentage of the rent, it's kind of self-adjusting. So that's the point I was trying to make. If you really want to help those who are renting the most, you would direct or target the aid directly at those persons who are eligible for the renter's income credit, renter's credit. And it is indexed according to income. So it's progressive in that nature. The people at the lowest quintiles of income are getting the greatest amount of benefit, and those who do not to own or have high incomes and rent anyway, they're not eligible for it. So, Chair Marquardt, you might have a thought on that, but certainly we've talked about this over the last 8 years.
Thank you, Representative Hertaus. If Representative Marquardt wants to add something, great. Otherwise, we're going to move on. I'm looking to see if he shakes his head yes or no. Okay, he's fine. All right. Seeing no other questions, members, Representative Howard, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for the discussion and for the testimony by all parties. I want to specifically call out Mr. Lightfoot and the League of Minnesota Cities. I recognize that cities do have concerns with a change, and I just appreciate the dialogue that we have and want to continue that dialogue. But what I will say is that this bill has been introduced for 3 years. There is plenty of research, and I'm not ready to throw in the towel, which frankly, that's what I sort of view. We've all seen it at the legislature when we kind of use studies to sort of throw in the towel and say, we'll just move on and kind of, I think we have the people, the tools, the talent to work together and reach a solution on this session. And so I just really look forward to the continued discussion to do that in the most reasonable way for a proposal that has such a breadth of support, bipartisan support from for-profit, nonprofit housing providers, from the Homes for All Coalition that represents hundreds of housing advocates throughout the state. As I said, now is not the time to wring our hands. Now is the time to take action to address our affordable housing crisis. And I fully commit to work with everyone who cares about this issue on this committee and on this call to make this happen. And so I just really appreciate the discussion, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Representative Fisher renews his motion that House File 1666 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the diversion report. The bill's laid over. Members, we have our final bill on the agenda is House File 1298 from Representative Herr. Representative Herr, would you like to move your bill before the division?
Yes, Madam Chair, I move that House File 1298 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Representative Herr, and I'm sorry we're on a tight schedule again, but to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you all for returning, committee members. In front of you is House File 1298, a bill to analyze the 4D low-income rental housing program. So mine is sort of a little bit of the flip side of Representative Howard's bill for those who might not kind of understand the difference between why there are two bills on 4D up. And if Representative Howard wasn't one of my best friends in the legislature, I might take issue with that studies are used to stop issues from moving forward, as this study really is just really wanting to do a study, and it is a one-year study. And so my hope is that before I start to talk about the bill, I do just want to say really quick that affordable housing and the current housing crisis we face is of the utmost importance to all cities and those who run these cities across the state. We are all very aware of this issue and know that we are in a crisis. Cities support the 4D program, and it allows cities to right-size any other public financing for affordable housing developments. And given the current circumstances of COVID-19 and instability of property taxes, it is imperative that we understand the impact of reducing the entire 4D class to a 0.25% and resulting property tax shift onto other properties. Now, just a really quick overview of this proposal is for a study. It's to determine the baseline for properties currently classified as 4D. So like the number of units, number of 4D units, number of units not classified as 4D, the property tax paid, et cetera. And to determine the impact on local property taxes in each political subdivision if the proposed expansion were to go into effect. And I think it's really important to note that related to this point, I want to quickly just address Representative Howard's bill for the changes to the 4D program and the analysis he referenced that was already completed. I want to remind the committee that today is the first time the 4D expansion has been heard in the House. A modest study was included in the 2019 division report, but not included in any signed legislation. So neither bill was heard last year, so this is the first time the House has actually considered the legislation. Madam Chair, I do have a number of people here to speak today, but before I just turn it over to them, I feel like there's a couple of things I wanted to just point out. I want to remind this committee that 4D is very complicated, and that if we're just looking at this one tool, it may seem like it makes sense for us to make adjustments to this tool. But for those who are not aware, there are different finance tools required for units to remain affordable for a certain period of time, from years to decades. 4D does not have any requirements for keeping units affordable. Its affordability is actually tied to other financing tools. Each development project requires multiple affordable financing tools from cities, state, and federal government. 4D is just one tool. Targeting this one tool as the instrument to fix the affordable housing issue may not produce the outcome advocates have been lifting up. That is why cities are asking for a study versus making changes to the 4D program. And just to outline a few of those financing tools, low-income housing tax credits, TIF, CDBG, home, Minnesota housing funds, and there's a number of them. So when we talk about affordable housing, one program doesn't make a development affordable. It is multiple programs put together. And really understanding how long units remain affordable is really important, and none of that is tied to 4D. And so I think 4D is great, but I think that for us to target one piece of why housing can be affordable, I think might be looking at one component of it as the panacea for the issues that we're experiencing, and it is not. So with that, Madam Chair, I would like to turn it over to my testifiers who are here to speak on this today.
Thank you, Representative Poher. We have Mr. Vandrearty. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed, and brevity will be appreciated.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Charlie Vandrearty for Metro Cities, which represents the collective interests of cities across the 7-county metropolitan region. Thanks for the opportunity to comment on behalf of cities in the metropolitan area in support of Representative Herr's bill, and thanks to Representative Howard for initiating the discussion this year. I'll begin by noting that the current 4D program is a state program that's paid for at the local level. So before an expansion is approved, we respectfully ask the committee to determine who would pay for it and how much they would pay. So Representative Herr's House File 1298 is built off the 2019 Property Tax Division Report, and it's needed because existing data does not provide the granular city-by-city analysis that looks at each jurisdiction's unique property tax structure. If the study were to be enacted, the resulting report would inform the legislature and cities with how many low-income and fixed-income homeowners and renters would be asked to pay for the 4D expansion. As Representative Herr said, cities support the current 4D program, but an expansion of this scope could have significant costs to the same lower-income Minnesotans that the expansion is stated to support. Madam Chair, the study would determine the baselines for current properties classified as 4D, and it would also determine the impact on local property taxes in each political subdivision if the proposed expansion were to go into effect, as Representative Herr explained. To the earlier point, if a study is conducted this year, then any expansion could be evaluated against local impacts. It could be potentially right-sized, and then guardrails could be added to ensure the benefits are reinvested in rent and the buildings. Thanks for your consideration of the study, and I'm happy to answer any questions after the committee hears from Jeff Sargent with the City of New Hope.
Thank you, Mr. Vandrarty. Mr. Sargent, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jeff Sargent, the Community Development Director for New Hope. Actually, I'll be echoing a lot of what has already been said here by Mr. Krafke and Mr. Lightfoot, too, just to give a brief analysis of New Hope here and our involvement with the 4D program. And again, like everybody else, we all understand the importance of low-income housing to preserve it. The benefits of preserving and maintaining our affordable housing is key. In 2018, we actually did, our city council approved a resolution that granted approval for Hennepin County HRA to provide direct contribution to two affordable housing units in the city, actually owned by AON, and that was through the 4D program. And again, at that time, it was a reduction of that tax rate from 1.25 down to 0.75. We were talking about 227 units, and the estimated impact to taxes were around $54,000 a year. Our council was actually had a split vote. We actually had multiple conversations about this at a work session meeting and then at the city council level. And they ultimately supported it, I believe, because of the fact that they understand the importance of preserving those naturally affordable housing units. But I would imagine that if that tax rate were to be, proposed to be decreased down to 0.25%, that our council would have had a lot harder time to try to approve that resolution. Obviously, our biggest concern is that New Hope is about 80% affordable for the single family housing stock. It's inevitable, I believe, that the single family taxpayers would potentially have to help make up for the lost budget revenue from a reduction of the 4D tax rate to 0.25. So essentially what that's meaning is that you are shifting the burden from one low-income housing population to a different low-income housing population with the cost of trying to make up that lost revenue through taxes. So, you know, it has been said that there is going to be that shift, but no one really knows what that shift is. I guess the importance of Bill 1298 is just to make sure that there is some kind of study out there that gives the cities an idea of what their potential impact could be and how to plan for that in the future. For that reason, you know, we would obviously support Representative Herr's bill here for that analysis. And I'd be happy to answer questions and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Sargent. I don't see any hands up right now, and I know we're up against the clock. So members, I think I'm going to give Representative Herr the final word, and this is going to be laid over so we can continue to have this conversation maybe offline as well. So Representative Herr.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee, for hearing our bill today. I just wanted to point out real quick that we heard from nonprofit developers today, but I think it's important for members to remember to know that nonprofit and private developers use 4D very differently. Nonprofit developers do work very hard to build deeply affordable housing. Private developers use 4D to fill in their financing gap to build some units that are affordable. A level of affordability is based on which affordable financing tools they use. This matters because we do have a huge need for deeply affordable housing, which is the least likely to be built. And these changes within the 4D without doing the study does not guarantee that this will happen. Cities care about and try to be intentional about every dollar they ask residents to pay. And without more analysis, it is clear that this is the best use, or that this will produce the most benefit for those who need it of those tax dollars. In St. Paul, the city hears from residents every year about the increasing burden, even when the city only raises the levy to equal the growth of St. Paul. Increased property taxes cannot be looked at in isolation. Year after year, small increases accumulate and lead to increases that burden property taxpayers, and it's the accumulation of that. I ask for your support of House File 1298 and renew my motion to lay the bill over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Representative Herr. Representative Herr renews her motion that House File 1298 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. So the bill's laid over. Thank you today for your work, members. Tomorrow we'll meet at 1 p.m. to go over the final group of local sales tax option sales tax proposals. Next week, we'll be back here with our normal time slot on Wednesday. Until then, we are adjourned.